Morning, historians from around the internet. Welcome back to the Old History Podcast. So I'm recording this the day before Thanksgiving. You know, I don't want to get caught up in family stuff and forget to make one. So hope everybody has a great Thanksgiving, has some good times with their families, and good weekend, and all that jazz. So, in case you may not have been on Facebook or YouTube, well, I haven't announced it on YouTube yet. I am now an affiliate. Well, I'm a member of the East Tennessee Historical Society, and Old History has been made an affiliate of them, which is so cool. We're still working out what that means for me, but nonetheless, it's an exciting jump forward for what I do. It gives me some backing to some of the stuff that I do. I'm not just some guy making videos on the internet, sharing pictures on the internet. That actually has some backing now, you know, because Dr. Warren Doctor, the CEO and president of East Tennessee Historical Society, you know, he's been talking to me pretty frequently. You know, I know he's a busy man, and the fact that he's taking time out of his day to just shoot me a message or, you know, provide some input on something, it says a lot. He's a good person, and I'm excited to work with him. Can't wait to see what kind of interesting projects we've get ourselves into. All right, so before we get into today's podcast, please go give my good friend Jason at the Beard Guy and Friends a look-see for all you bearded guys out there. Might need some beard care products. All right, so last podcast we made was over the Trans-Appalachia Pact, as it's called, or the Proclamation of 1763. We discussed how this was one of the first steps in one of the first stops along the road to independence. You know, basically, France claimed this territory, Britain wanted it. France had pit the natives against the British, blah, blah, blah. And then whenever France ceded the territory, Britain wouldn't let the early pioneers, the early colonists, to go over the Appalachian Mountains and settle. We did talk about how one of the first houses in this area was built in 1762. It's called Longmeadow and predates the Trans-Appalachia Pact. And I think that's so interesting because William Young got that house on a land grant, on a royal land grant. So it's one of the oldest houses in Tennessee. Longmeadow, it's a private residence. I posted about it on the Old History Facebook page. You should go read about it. So today's podcast is going to be about the Townsend Acts. And it's the next important stop on the road to the Revolution, the road to independence. And once again, ushistory.org has provided a great article on that. And we'll also be discussing the Boston Massacre, which comes almost directly after the Lord have mercy. The Boston Massacre comes directly after the Townsend Acts. So we'll be discussing those in sequence. Alright, so the Townsend Acts. Okay, so the relationship between the American colonies and England in the aftermath of the Stamp Act, the repeal of the Stamp Act can basically be described as, you know, tension, nervous tension, anxious about what comes next. And there were several issues that didn't even get solved. Firstly, Parliament had absolutely no means, no wish to send a message across the Atlantic saying that ultimate authority was in the colonial legislatures. And immediately after repealing the Stamp Act, Parliament issued the Declaratory Acts. And this act would proclaim Parliament's ability to sort of ban the colonies in all cases whatsoever, kind of bind them up. And the message was, you know, pretty blatantly obvious that under no circumstance did Parliament abandon in principle its right to legislate for 13 colonies. In the Western Hemisphere, leaders were pretty optimistic about the repeal of the Stamp Act, but they found the suggestions of the Declaratory Act pretty threatening. Most American statesmen had drawn a pretty bold line between legislation and taxation. In 1766, the notion of parliamentary supremacy over the law was questioned pretty highly, only by a radical few, but the ability to tax without representation was another matter. The Declaratory Act made no such distinction. All cases whatsoever to the colonists meant surely they could, that gave them the power to tax. And they waited for the issue to resurface, many assemblymen. And sure enough, this truce did not last long. Back in London, Charles Townshend persuaded the House of Commons to, once again, tax the colonists, and this time it would be through a tax on items like glass, paper, lead, and tea. And that really just kind of made the colonists mad. So Mr. Townshend obviously had ulterior motives. Revenue from these duties would now be used to pay the salaries of colonial governors. This was not an insignificant change. As traditionally, the legislatures of the colonies held the authority to pay the governors. It wasn't unheard of for a governor's salary to be withheld if the legislature became dissatisfied with any decision. The legislature could, in effect, blackmail the governor into submission, kind of making him do what they wanted. Once this important leverage was removed, the governors would be, they would be open to oppose whatever the assembly put out. And Townshend took this another step further by appointing an American board of commissioners, customs commissioners. This body would be stationed in the colonies to enforce compliance with tax policy. Customs officials received bonuses for every convicted smuggler, so there were obvious incentives to capture the colonists. Given that the violators were tried in a juryless admiralty courts, there was a high chance of conviction. Townshend would also press the Americans to the limit by suspending the New York legislature for failing to provide adequate supplies for British troops stationed there. And this foreshadowed a showdown in the future. And we'll talk about that here in just a little while. So, reactions in the colonies were similar to those during the Stamp Act crisis, and once again, non-importation was implemented. Extra legal activity such as harassing tax collectors and merchants who violated the boycotts were not common. And then the colonial assemblies basically sprung into action after this. And then there would be a circular letter come around to the colonies that the Massachusetts legislature had recommended. Basically said, they wanted collective action against the British Parliament, and in turn, Parliament threatened to disband the body unless they repealed the letter. And by a vote of 92 to like 17, Massachusetts lawmakers refused and were duly dissolved. Other colonial assemblies voiced support of Massachusetts by affirming this circular letter. And then this circulator would be penned by none other than Samuel Adams in 1768. And it basically outlined Massachusetts' opposition to taxation without representation. And it was sent to several other colonial legislatures, inviting them to unite in their actions against the British government. And in response, Lord Hillsborough, that's a name, warned colonial legislatures to treat the circular letter with contempt and threatened dissolution to any legislative body that adhered to Massachusetts' plea. And these words would fall on deaf ears and would go in one ear and out the other as his legislative assemblies throughout the colonies, including New York, Rhode Island, and New Jersey, rose to the occasion and accepted the position set forth by Adams and Massachusetts. And the more that Britain tried to bind all the colonies together, the greater the resistance was, and by 1769, the British merchants began to feel the impact of non-importation, and in April of 1770, news of a partial repeal, the tax on tea, you know, the tax on tea that was maintained, reached America. And the second came at a high price, reached only after military occupation of Boston and the ensuing Boston Massacre. And we'll pause here just for a moment, and then we'll talk about the Boston Massacre. So the Boston Massacre, this is an important thing on the road to revolution. This was one of the moments where the colonists said, hey, if they can attack us in Boston and do this, it can happen anywhere. So this wasn't, you know, like a he said, she said kind of thing. Blood was shed here over the clash of ideas. Now, the large-scale fighting between American, the colonists, colonial Minutemen, and the British Redcoats wouldn't start until 1775. 1770 Boston Massacre gave each side a taste and an idea of what was to be a couple years later. None of the colonies were too thrilled with the Townshend Act, but there wasn't any greater resentment anywhere else than Boston. British officials in Boston feared for their lives, and when attempts were made to seize two of John Hancock's trading vessels, Boston, they was ready to go, man. They wanted it right then. Lord Hillsborough, who was Parliament's minister on American affairs, finally ordered four regiments to be moved into Boston. Sam Adams and James Otis, they didn't like this too much, and less than 3 weeks prior to the arrival of the British troops, people of Boston, you know, they assembled in Faneuil Hall, I believe that's how you say that. But when the British marched boldly through the middle of town on October the 1st, the only resistance seen was on the facial expressions of the townspeople. The people of Boston had decided to show restraint. And the other 12 colonies watched the proceedings in Boston with pretty high interest. Perhaps, you know, maybe their fears about British tyranny were true, and the moderates found it difficult to argue that the Crown was not interested in stripping away American civil liberties by having a standing army stationed in Boston. Now, throughout this little occupation, sentiment shifted further and further away from the London government. And this here is a turning point, but for a lot of Americans, because they had came here to get away from, you know, the tyranny in Britain and prosecution, you know, for centuries earlier. And they're over here and it's still happening, and they're like, hey, we got to do something. And then on March 5th, 1770, the inevitable happened. It was honestly, it couldn't be avoided. A mob of about 60 townspeople descended upon the guard at the customs house. And when reinforcements were called, you know, the people, the angry mob became pretty unruly, pretty irate. Started throwing rocks and cans and all kinds of stuff at the guard and the reinforcements. And in the heat of this, the British militia fired without Captain Thomas Preston's command. Imperial bullets took the lives of 5 men, including Crispus Attucks, who was a former slave, and there were several others injured. Captain Preston informed his men were cleared of all charges in the trial that came after. Two others would be convicted of manslaughter, but were sentenced to basically a branding of the thumb. The lawyer who represented the British soldiers was none other than Patriot John Adams. At this same time that Preston's men drew blood in Boston, Parliament in London had decided once again to concede on the issue of taxation. All of the Townshend Act duties were repealed, save for one, which was a tax on tea. This would be another fallacy on part of the British. When the Massachusetts legislature reconvened, despite, you know, caused by a lot of other people to continue the tea boycott until taxes were repealed, most of the American colonists continued on with importation. The events in Boston from 1768 to 1770 were not soon forgotten. The squabbles, legal squabbles, were one thing, but bloodshed was another. Despite the verdict of the soldiers' trial, our ancestors, they didn't forget this. And they learned that the British would use whatever force, whenever, however they wanted. And that concludes the podcast for today. And the next thing to talk about... Hold on here. The next thing to talk about would be the Tea Act and the Tea Parties and then the Intolerable Acts. Intolerable Acts is one of the last things before they declared independence. You have the Stamp Act, Congress, then you get into the Continental Congress and all that. So I hope you guys enjoyed this podcast and hope you guys had an even better weekend. Maybe some of you guys got off of work. Maybe you just had the day off, but nonetheless, hope everybody had a great time with their families. And look out on the old history for a new video. If I have time this weekend, there's a thing in Rogersville I'm going to try and film. It's supposed to be a Native American wear trap, like a fishing trap in the middle of a river. It's in the shape of a V. And basically, the Native people, or whoever was willing to go into the river, would go in there with baskets and they would get the fish out and they'd have dinner. Lunch, dinner, breakfast, whatever. So nonetheless, be on the lookout for that.